for his shock when they described to him the coolest project of them all. He quickly asked for the detailed schematics of the Sky Tower and began to study hard. The approach. Lara and Bracknell were driving one of the project's electric power minivans to the Quito airport. Bracknell planned to attend Sky Tower Corporation's board meeting and the news conference at which they would make the announcement that the tower was ready for operations. Then they would stay for a weekend of interviews and publicity events and return to Quito the following Monday. "You sure you don't want to get married in Paris?" he asked her, grinning happily as he drove the quiet minivan down the steep gravel-surfaced road. "We could have the ceremony at the top of the Eiffel Tower. It'd be kind of symbolic." Trucks and buses ground by in the opposite direction, raising clouds of gritty gray dust as they headed uphill toward Sky City. Lara shook her head. "I tried to get through all the red tape on the computer link, Mance, but it's hopeless. We'd have to stay 2 weeks at least." "The French want our tourist dollars. And they want to do their own blood tests, their own searches of our citizenship data. I think they even check Interpol for criminal records." "So we'll get married when we come back," he said easily. "And we can invite our families and friends. I'll ask Victor if he can come back for the occasion and be my best man." Lara made no reply. "Hey, why don't we ask Reverend Danvers to perform the ceremony?"
"At his new chapel?"
"Unless you'd rather do it in the cathedral in Quito."
"No," Lara said. "Let's do it at the base of the tower. Reverend Danvers will be fine."
He wanted to kiss her. He even considered pulling off on the shoulder of the road to do it. Instead, he drove in silence for a while, grinning happily. The road became paved as they neared Quito's airport. Traffic built up. Lara turned in her seat and looked out the rear window.
"It's going to feel strange not seeing the tower in the sky," she said.
"It'll be there when we get back," Bracknell said easily. "For the next few days, you'll just have to settle for the Eiffel Tower." "Docking confirmed," said the clipper ship's co-pilot. He was wearing dark glasses, too, like the pilot. Zack thought he looked kind of like an Asian, but his accent sounded California or some other part of the States. "Tell the tower crew they can begin unloading," the pilot replied. Zack knew what that meant. The clipper was attached to the Sky Tower now by a docking adapter, a short piece of insulated tunnel that linked the tower's airlock to the clipper's cargo hatch. A team of technicians from the Sky Tower would come through the adapter and begin unloading the clipper's cargo bay. Zack thought of them as chimps doing stupid monkey tasks. Unseen by the tower personnel, a dozen men and women recruited from God knows where would exit one of the clipper ship's other airlocks, in spacesuits, of course, carrying the clipper's real cargo. 50 tiny capsules of nanomachines, gobblers programmed to tear apart carbon molecules such as buckyballs. Zack had spent months studying the schematics of the Sky Tower that the Flower Dragon people had supplied him, calculating just how to bring the tower down. They had balked at first when he suggested gobblers. Nanotechnology was anathema to them. But someone higher up in the organization had overridden their objections and provided the highly dangerous gobblers for Zack's project of destruction. Now, 12 religious fanatics were out there playing with nanomachines that could kill them if they weren't careful. Each of the EVA team bore a mini-cam attached to his or her helmet so Zack could direct their actions from the safety of the cockpit, securely linked to the outside crew by hair-thin optical fibers that carried his radio commands with no chance that they'd be overheard by the guys in the tower. "Now comes the fun part," Zack thought as he powered up the laptop he would use for communicating with the EVA team. Ralph Waldo Emerson was also remotely watching the unloading, still wondering why the supply contractor had gone to the expense of hiring a shiny new clipper ship instead of sending up another automated freighter. "In faith, 'twas strange," he murmured as he stood in the control center. "'Twas passing strange." "You spouting poetry again?" his assistant asked. Emerson considered yanking the comm plug out of his ear, but knew that would be the wrong thing to do. Instead, he asked, "How's it going?" "It's going. Riley and his guys are pushing the packages through the hatch, and I'm checking them off as they come in. Nothing much to it, just a lot of muscle work. Trained chimps could do this. Emerson could see the bored team on one of the working screens gliding the weightless big crates along through the adapter tunnel. "Well, just be careful in there," he said. "Just because we're in zero-G doesn't mean those packages don't have mass. Get caught between a crate and wall, and you'll get your ribs caved in, just like on Earth." "I know that." His assistant sounded impatient, waspish. "Just make sure your chimpanzees know it." "What? No poetry for the occasion?" Emerson immediately snapped, "A fool and his ribcage are soon parted." Zack was humming tunelessly to himself as he called up the schematics and matched them with the camera views from his EVA team. The connection between the geostationary platform and the tower's main cables was the crucial point. Sever that link and some 35,000 kilometers of sky tower go crashing down to Earth. And the other 35,000 on the other side of the platform go spinning off into space, carrying the platform with it. He suppressed the urge to giggle, knowing it would annoy the sour-faced pilots sitting as immobile as statues in arm's reach in front of him. "I'm going to wipe out the biggest structure anybody's ever built. Wham! And down it goes. It'll probably fall onto Quito," Zack reasoned. "Kill a million people, maybe. Like the hammer of God slamming them flat. Like a big boot squishing bugs. The culmination of my career," Zack thought. "But nobody will know that I did it. Nobody really knows who I am. Not anybody who counts. But they will after this. I'm going to stand up and tell the world that I did this. Me, Franklin Zachariah, the terror of terrors, Dr. Destruction." Lara was wearing open-weave huaraches instead of regular shoes, Bracknell realized as they inched along the line at the airport security site. He frowned as he thought that they'd probably want him to take off his boots before going through the metal detector. "Damned foolishness," he said to himself. "There hasn't been a terrorist threat at an airport in more than 20 years, but they still go through this goddamn nonsense." Sure enough, the stocky, stern-faced security guard pointed silently to Bracknell's boots as Lara sailed unbothered through the metal detector's arch. Grumbling, Bracknell tugged the boots off and thumped them down on the conveyor belt that ran through the X-ray machine. He set off the metal detector's alarm anyway and had to be searched by a pair of grim-looking guards. He had forgotten the handheld computer phone he was carrying in his shirt pocket. "No, no," Zack said sharply into his laptop's microphone. "Just open the capsule and wedge it into the cable. That's all you have to do. The nanobugs will do the rest." The job was taking much longer than he'd expected. 50 cables, that's all we have to break," Zack grumbled silently. "And these chimps are taking all fucking day to do it." The underside of the geostationary platform looked like an immense spider web to Zack as he peered at it through the cameras of his EVA team. It matched the specs in his files almost exactly. There were always slight deviations between the blueprints and the actual construction. Nobody can build anything this big without straying from the plans here and there, at least a little bit. Zack knew that the tower's main support came from these cables, stretched taut by centrifugal force as the whole gigantic assembly swung through space in synchrony with the Earth's daily spin. Break that connection here at the geostationary level, and the stretching force disappears. The tower will collapse to the ground while the equally long upper section goes spinning out into space. 50 cables, he repeated to himself. Let those nanobugs eat through 50 cables and the others won't have the strength to hold the rig together. 50 cables. Emerson's earplug chimed softly with the tone he knew came from the safety officer. "Go ahead," he said into his lip mic. "I got something strange going on here." "What?" "That clipper you got docked, it's venting gases."
"Venting?"
"Hydrogen and oxygen, from what the laser spectrometer tells me." Emerson thought a moment. "Bleeding a nearly empty tank, maybe." The safety officer's voice sounded troubled. "This ain't a bleed. They're pumping out a lot of gas, like the propellant they'd be using for their return trip." "Curiouser and curiouser," Emerson quoted.
Zack licked his lips. The 50 cables were now being eaten away by the